fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes? There comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Hubert Edwards and you're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. This evening we're going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation as usual. We had a little bit of a plan and we had to make a little bit of a shift in that. But in the 7 o'clock hour, we are going to be joined by a guest. And we're going to have somewhat of a fireside chat. We're going to talk about some things that he wants to talk about, that I can talk about, and I'm sure that you want to hear being talked about. And these are things which have been spoken about many, many times, but we're hoping that tonight we'll be able to put a different spin to become a little bit more focused on what the future holds for us as a country, as a people. And where we are going for, in terms of this economic recovery and how we're going to seek and find economic development. That's one of the areas we were talking about. But in the meantime, when you look at the news, the headlines, it says taxes not driving up food costs. Food costs rise, and that is the Minister of Economic Affairs. Mr. Michael Elkitis is saying that inflation in the U.S. is to be blamed for that. Inflation in the U.S. is at a record high in terms for the last 40 years. Inflation went up, I think, by 7.5%. Mainland Europe, it is reported here, is seeing inflation as high as 5.1%. And this is going to be very challenging for the Bahamas. As a country that imports most of its goods and services, then certainly, we're going to be importing some high levels of inflation, especially as it relates to food. Government considering whether more unemployment assistance is necessary. The fact that the consideration is on the table is in and of itself a significant story. It tells you that the information on the ground suggests that all is not yet well. We are not out of the bush. We are not out of the woods. We are at a place where there are still persons who are in need. Low incomes not keeping up with skyrocketing food costs. This article is very, very interesting. And this is from yesterday's newspaper, actually. It says, the $200 that Melissa Johnson spends in the food store at the end of every month isn't enough for her and her two children, she said. Johnson, 39, who lives on Augusta Street, said yesterday that she's doing her best to survive as food prices skyrocket. It's been rough, but we have managed to make it, said as her school-age nephew and niece played inside the home. I work for the government. I get paid every other month. The cost of living is very high. Going to the food store and buying your stuff, you have to try to budget what you have. I normally spend $200 and I go at the end of every month. Does the grocer last? The Guardian asks. She replied, it doesn't last for me. The children eat a lot, and with the pandemic, they were eating a lot more. Then they go to school only 2 days out of the week, and so you have to find money for them for breakfast. Food prices have increased globally due to the disruption of the global supply chain and other factors. This story is very interesting. I won't go all the way to the end, but let's unpack a couple of things from this. Because as we contemplate the recovery, as we think about where we are, as we contemplate the headwinds which are coming down the pipe, oftentimes we kind of focus on the economics of it, yes. I admittedly, I talk a lot about the economics of stuff. But there's also that social side that we tend to gloss over. So this is talking about how the price of food is skyrocketing. But listen to this. The $200, this woman have to be a magician. This woman have to be one of the greatest rationer in the world to live in the Bahamas, to spend $200 per month for grocery. There's absolutely, unequivocally no way. I just can't bend my mind around it. I understand that when you're in the midst of things, you make things happen. But the whole point is this, and I'm sure you out there will agree if we're honest. Kind of stretch your mind and figure with me for a moment what exactly $200 is going to get you to last for a month. But that's where she is. Then it goes further to say, I work for the government. I get paid every other month. Now, there's so many persons out there who are not working. Persons believe in the Bahamas that when you have a government job, everything is nice and hunky-dory. But here's an individual who says she works for the government. I'm proposing that this must be a misprint, but the Guardian don't do that type of a thing. When you get paid every other month and you spending $200 per month, how does she survive? How does a family survive? And this is the social side to this whole thing. Yes, it's kind of about money and economics, but think about what happens when food goes, people get hungry, still have to go to school, not enough money to pay for the light, the water, and the other things. Think about that individual turning up at work, worrying about where the next meal is going to come from, worrying about how she's going to take care of the kids and so on and so forth. She's not as productive as she ought to be. These things are very, very, very serious. And we talk all the while about the scarring effect of the economic downturn. Here are some of them. Here are some of the things which really jumping out at us. The National Review yesterday talks about, and we heard this on all the talk shows, value for money in the absence of audit, DRA remains unaccountable. Former chairman says contracts were awarded above board. And there's a quote here from Alex Starr which says, we are in Grand Bahama and we are finding contracts that have been issued that don't seem to have been properly monitored. The invoices were being paid without the proper checks being done. And Heather Hunt is quoted as saying, it is curious that 3 weeks before an FNM convention where I'm offering for a deputy chairman position, the Free National Movement, that I would be singled out of one of the many contractors who perform work for the government since the passage of Hurricane Dorian. And we have John Michael Clark saying, to my knowledge, up until last June when the collection exercise was done, we were reasonably satisfied that the money spent collecting and organizing the debris on the site was well spent. So this, I think, is going to be one of those things which have some legs going forward. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. The DPM, no significant impact from the seizure of crystal ships. And the EU has listed the Bahamas amongst countries which are still deficient at BEPS. So we have a number of emerging issues which we have to keep an eye on. And at the end of the day, obviously, we need to make sure that when monies are spent, then you have value. Because the Bahamas really just don't have no money. Wilchcombe says government looking at ways to help struggling families. So here we are again on the other side of what looked like a pandemic circumstance, which is opening up. We're getting better. The rates of infection are dropping significantly. We hear good news coming out of the U.S., but this is the other side of the coin. And the question is how we are going to deal with it. So as we go about our daily affairs, we need to bear in mind that there are persons out there who are still struggling, persons out there who still want to or still find themselves in circumstances where they're going to need help. They're going to need you and I sometime to step up and do a little bit more. They're going to call on government to help out just a little bit more, and consequently, even some of the planned expenses, we may find that they are understated simply because the additional need have not been realized, not because they were deliberately so. But we have to bear that in mind. But, as you go to the supermarket tomorrow, I know some of you will. There are many persons out there who will go to the supermarket tomorrow and they will spend $200 for the food for the weekend. Work with me. You're going to spend $200 for food for the weekend or for next week. Just think about for a moment that there are families, there are individuals in this very country who will spend said $200 with the expectation that they will be able to accumulate enough to last them for an entire month. Oftentimes, we neglect to think about those who do not have as much. They struggle, they try hard, but the two hands just can't meet. And that is going to be, in my mind, one of the greatest struggles as we come out of this pandemic. How are we going to be our brothers and sisters' keeper? And this is not just on an individual level, but from a collective country level. Where are the resources? Where are the resources going to come from to ensure that everyone is okay? Because at this point in time, it's significantly stretched. It's tight. Really, really tight. But there are persons out there who are suffering. Some have already dropped over the edge, and some are very close to it. And we have to make sure that those who are falling over, the landing is as soft as possible. And those who are heading towards it, we have to find a way of clawing them back. We must. And so we must contribute. So you remember we had our Take Five, so if there's somebody out there, you help, give a $5, spend a little bit of time with them, encourage them, then do it. Because these are challenging times, extremely challenging times. I want to make a quick announcement here. There is a cookout, as it's generally known of, as in aid of Elvarda Goldie McKinney. And this is a medical fundraiser. They will be providing chicken and pork for $12, fish for $15, and this is going to be Saturday. So this Saturday coming, February 12th, from 12 noon until 8 a.m. And so it's going to be, the direction is opposite the Wendy's sign on Prince Charles Drive. Once you get there, you take the Quail Roos Road, make a right at the T-junction, then take the right onto Camperdown Heights.
can I pronounce this? Comelini or Comelimi Road, fourth house on the right. The easiest thing to do maybe is to call the number. They're selling tickets. So tickets on sale and the number is 432-0199. 432-0199. They will have drinks and pastries. Will also be on sale. And it is to raise funds for a young man who was in an accident. And currently, he is unable to do a lot of things for himself. Now, his sister was supposed to be here this evening to have a little bit of a talk about that. But, I think she's the head cook and bottle washer. And as a result of that, a little bit stretched for time. And so we want to appeal to you, all the persons out there. If you have the ability to wear it all and you wish to contribute, then go out and support us. If you want to donate, then certainly you want to call up the number. Or if you are out there and you know how to reach out to me, then you may want to do that. You can find me at 376-8951. That's 376-8951. If you were to do that, I would certainly find a way of ensuring that this family will get the support, whatsoever support it is that you would provide. But anyway, they need monies, and they need monies for his medical fund. I think there is a desire to have a operation so that he will have the ability to use his limb. And so, really, really want to encourage you to do that. And for other persons out there, as we move about the roads, I'm encouraging you, be kind on the street. Be careful. First of all, you need to protect yourself and you need to drive for yourself, but you also have to drive for others. We want to avoid at all costs accidents. We want to make sure that we wear our seatbelts. We want to make sure if we're riding on bikes, we wear our helmets. Because just in case something should happen, you want to minimize the potential damage. You can't avoid anything totally, but you want to minimize the damage. So let's put ourselves in a state of readiness this year. In 2022, we're just coming out of a big pandemic. Things are improving. A number of persons died. We don't want to hear about anybody else dying. And certainly we don't want to hear about individuals being in an accident and getting to the place where they become a paraplegic. Because it really puts a strain on the individual. It takes away a productive body. It takes away an individual as we know them, lively, somebody who may be jovial, someone who is the life of the party, someone who is a supporter of the family, an individual who is trustworthy and you can be dependent on. All of a sudden, is gone and the circle changes. And that individual now becomes dependent on others. That dependency puts strain on these individuals, puts strain on friends, on families, on neighbors. The whole ecosystem of which that individual is a part changes, and sometimes changes in a very fundamental way. So let's play our part. Let's drive carefully so that we do not cause accident which hurt others and hurt ourselves. And let's use the mechanisms which we have available, helmet, seat belts, whatsoever other means, to ensure that as we ply the roads in these very, very dangerous machines, because that's what cars and bikes are. They're very, very dangerous machines. They're useful, but they can be dangerous. And so we drive safely. Like this afternoon, as I was heading to the studio, coming on the street, heading to the intersection right with E Street. So that is East Street South. And which was the road name again? The name slips me at the moment. But anyway, one individual decided, well, I can't wait to go through the light. So I'm going to go on the opposite side of the street, heading west, where cars are only allowed to travel eastwardly. So Robinson Road. I don't know why I can't remember that. So it's Robinson Road and E Street. So when you're coming down Robinson Road, you're on the left side. Well, the guy went over on the right side in order to turn right to continue north on E Street. Certainly a dangerous thing. But we do these things all the time without really thinking about ourselves and thinking about others. Because as simple as, well, it's not a simple thing, but the briefness of the moment, another car could have just shot out of some place. All of a sudden, somebody could have died, or worse. I say worse, yes. Someone could have been injured, and injured in such a way that they're unable to be of much use to themselves. I see that as being worse in my mind. You may not agree, but you know, we can agree to differ on that. I'm not trying to be insensitive, it's just my position. So we have situations where we have users of the roads who are being not nice, who are not being cautious enough. And many times we ourselves, even though we may not do what that person did, we do not wear our seatbelts, or we ride a bike and we do not wear helmets and so on and so forth. We're taking too much chances with our lives and the lives of others. So let's be cautious. But the bigger picture here is I am asking you, I'm imploring you, I'm begging you, beseeching you to go out and support the fundraising effort, the medical fundraising effort for Elvada Goldie McKinney. And that is going to be held someplace there in the Camperdown Heights. It's Cumelemi, Cumelemi Road, and it's the fourth house on the right. You can call for tickets. It's 432-0199. That's 432-0199. And if you're so minded and you're not able to touch base with those individuals and you want to make a contribution so that they can raise more money, then certainly find me. Find somebody here, call up the Guardian and tell them I have a couple $1,000 worth of goods I would like to donate to you, or I have a couple of dollars. Put it in a nice envelope and leave it at the front desk. Write on it, Elvada McKinney Fundraising, care of the essentials, and we definitely will ensure that the family gets it. Put your name in there, put your number and your contact so that somebody can call you, that you send $5 and $5 was actually delivered. However you want to do it, or however you want to make sure, we want to make sure we are always going to be very cautious with your money, because the last thing I would want is for you to believe, if you did contribute, that it didn't go to the right place. So want to check that out, and want to say to the family and friends of the young man, Elvada Goldie McKinney, you know, hold strong. You know, these things sometimes happen, and it's now time for you to rally around him, to be as supportive as you can, to give as much as you can. But we are hoping and we are wishing and we are praying that you will be able to raise sufficient money to afford him this operation, and the operation will be successful, and he will find some measure of improvement, which is going to improve the quality of his life. It's nothing like being able to do things for yourself, being able to move around and not be in that position anymore. So the extent to which we can get him closer back to where he was, then that would be of great benefit to himself, and certainly it would be good for family and friends. Good night, Mr. Edwards. I just love when you on the show. If it's only you one and you have your own home, you can survive on $200 per month for food. I just thought I would throw that there. Keep up the good works. Okay, I can't read the last word though. So, the truth is, yeah, I can roll with that. I certainly think if, you know, I was to buy food for myself, $200 per month, maybe I would survive. But the truth is, I have a young son, and I think he does $200 maybe twice over per month, easily. And so my heart goes out to these individuals. And this is why at the beginning of the year, I started with this idea. Let's figure out a way of how we can help others. So we're here on the show. I'm here on the show and we're talking with each other. But not just make it a platform for talking and discussing ideas. Let's use it as a platform for doing things, small, practical things to help others. So the idea was $5 per week. So we would have gone 5 weeks in January so far. So five fives, 25. I have my $25 put aside. The discussion was, if you come with $5, any amount of money you come with, we're going to try to find a way of matching it. So if you come with $500, then we will make an appeal maybe to a business house or some person who is, you know, who have some money and philanthropic minded to match that. And then we're going to find a couple of families. We're not going to give one person all the funds. We're going to find a couple of families since $200 we may be working with. Well, if $200 can get you through 2 weeks of food, let's give them $200 and, you know, go buy some food and help to stretch the already stretched budget that you have. But let's use our time. Let's use our efforts. Let's use our resources in a practical and substantial way. So take five. Give the $5. If there's an individual on in your immediate vicinity, I am saying, take enough from your lunch money every single day so that you can give somebody $5 at least one day per week so that they can have something. Children are going back out to school and it's difficult for parents who have now have reduced income to find money for breakfast and lunch. You know, help somebody with $5. Spend 5 minutes speaking into somebody's life and encourage them. Or take 5 minutes per day, add it up, make it half an hour, and spend half an hour with an individual. Whether on the phone, you can do it via Zoom, or you can do it face-to-face. However works with you, let's try to do that. Let's try to do that. And if you're a business house out there, then think about whether or not you could grab, but you could find five young men, young women in a distressed situation and help them out for, say, 5 months. You know, some care package or some books or something just to make life a little bit better. Or you may decide, well, you know, there are a couple of guys who were in school, they were a little bit challenged, so we are going to put them in an apprenticeship program for maybe another 5 months and then let's see how we can help them turn their lives around. And so we're working with this 5-5-5. And my biggest five for this year would be if we can raise $50,000 for scholarship by the time we get to December. It's a big number. It's an ambitious number. But we want to do that. Wouldn't it be great if we can find some really good students who are really challenged and say to the parents, just take care of them. Just wash their clothes. Just make sure that they turn up at school well, because we are going to make sure that their school fees are paid and they have all of the books and all of the clothes that they need. We just ask them to be good students. We can't touch everybody. We won't cover everybody. But let's start with somebody, at least one. I think we can do it. I really, really believe that we can. And this year, we're going to make a difference. So, you know, each month, grab out your money. $25. If you can do more, do $50, do $100. But let's use the resources that we have. Because the truth is, sometimes it's a little bit challenging to, you know, say I'm going to give $100 per month. But when you look at that in hindsight, when you get to December and you look back, you realize, you know, I could have given $100 easily and it wouldn't make a difference. It wouldn't be much to me, but it will make a huge difference in the lives of others. And I really want us to do that this year, because 2022 is going to be a rough year. It is going to be a rough year. Things may look nice because, you know, we're opening up back and we have more freedom and things, but here is what is true. there is a huge cost saving that comes with being locked down. It's challenging, it's stressful, but there's a cost saving that comes with that. When things open up, costs increase. You now have to go on the bus. You now need to go back to school. You now need to do when one meal per day could carry you through and you could survive on whatsoever is there. It's different. So the costs will go up. There's more electricity being used. There's more this, more that. And part of the challenge is that there's not going to be any more income. As a matter of fact, it is more likely than anything that income for many persons will reduce. So how can we help them? For who much is given to, much is expected. There are many of us out there, myself included, that have a little bit more than others. And I think we have an obligation, an explicit obligation. That obligation is given to us, by us, because we are good people, we have a conscience, and we understand that as a community, it is our responsibility to help the community be at its best. So we're going to find some people, and we're going to do it. It may not come very quickly, because these things are ideas, and they take a little time to get momentum. But believe me, when I say to you that we're going to do it, we're going to do it, and we're going to keep speaking about it, and we're going to ask persons who listen to dig in your pockets. If it's $1, $2, so let's five of us put $1 together and we get the $5 and we can bless up somebody. All right? So that is what we want to do. And so you, the person who is out there listening to us, yes, $200 can make it to the end of the month if you're alone, but consider this young lady who has children, works and get paid every other month, and she have to make it work. These are the persons that we want to keep in mind, and we want to keep them in mind continuously. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back on the other side, I think our guest should be turning up anytime soon. If he's not here, then we'll continue to talk. We want you to join us. Our numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. The text line, 422-4796. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises the public, its customers, and residents of Taylor Street, Nassau Village, that the corporation will commence improvement work on January 31st, 2022, for a period of 10 weeks. During this period, there may be interruption in water supply, road closures, and detours around the work area. Where possible, motorists are asked to avoid the area between the hours of 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused and appreciates your patience as they work to improve their level of service.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
Come back to The Essentials, The Reset. We certainly want to hear from you. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259.
Our text line 422-4796. Give us a call. Give us a text. Your contribution, your input is absolutely, absolutely important because, you know, it's good to have conversation. It's not too cool to be sitting and talking by yourself. And so we have invited an individual. Well, he's kind of invited himself. I'm going to be honest with you. So I got a message, I think, early this morning. It was sent last evening, but I saw it early this morning. And it says, congrats on your appointment. Maybe you can pursue the government to put some meat on those bones. Then some of the bones are the orange economy, the blue economy, the green economy, knowledge economy, conceptual economy, digital, small d economy, and big D, digital, global economy, and the aquamarine economy, so all the different colors. These can actually add billions to the GDP yearly if they can completely move beyond talk and actually develop strategies for the ecosystems in which they can thrive. Each of the multiple subsets can employ thousands almost immediately and sustain the economy during the buildup. And so he's saying, hey, Edwards, I see you get an appointment someplace over there. And we need to talk about that because some people think I just got a big payday, right? It's volunteer work, totally volunteer work. I need to make that clear because, you know, I know you were planning on giving me that little thing. I still want it. You know, didn't get no money. It's volunteer work, but it's important work. And I am humbled and, you know, happy to be able to be in that position and to be able to serve. So I'm going to invite the man who sent me that message, Mr. C. Allen. You all know him. He talks a lot about these issues. But I am bringing him on this evening with a challenge. We're not going to be highfalutin and totally conceptual. We want to talk about ideas at a practical level, and we want to put forward one or two solutions by the end of the show. C. Allen, welcome back to The Essentials.
Thank you so much. Thank you once again for having me, and good afternoon to the wider Bahamas.
Yes, and the world, because there are persons all over the world listening to you. Yeah, so let's talk, C. Allen. You know, I know you have to say hello to the Bahamas first, but you know, you have to kind of help me out.
I was thinking the Bahamas was the world.
Oh, you're thinking the Bahamas was the world. Well, the Bahamas is the world for those persons who are here. And then when we go someplace else, then that is the world too. And those persons who are wherever they are, I think they're the world. But anyway, we are at a interesting time in the development of the country. The recent financial strategy report and the debt management strategy was released, and there was a cover note, a cover letter, if you will, a press release. And when you read through that, there's a one line in it which says the economic health of the country is in a perilous state. One line. But I think it very, very succinctly and very powerfully capture what the real truth of our realities are. But then once you get beyond that, things start to get a little bit not so clear. So you are of the view, C. Allen, that we have the wherewithal and we have resources that is up to this point in time, unexploited, where we have the potential to unleash greater economic value for the country. Is that your proposition?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, talk to us.
Yeah, I think the word, when we look at, we use the word Chinese crisis is opportunity. And so essentially, if we actually stay focused or tethered.
I think you're a little bit low, C. Allen, if you could speak directly to you.
Okay, yeah. Sure, yeah. If we stay, are you hearing me better?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, if we stay actually tethered to our past behaviors, trying to rebuild 2019, we are going to find that we are in a cycle in this loop. If we just take a look at what has happened since Dorian, And then we take a look at what has happened during COVID. For most people who don't understand, is that most, for even, and I guess this could tie into the, what's it, the Expo 2020. The Expo 2020 before the COVID came was a focus on the future, aiming towards 2025 as to where the world will be and what things will happen. Well, COVID changed that. But at the same time, what COVID did was accelerate by virtue 1 year, every 3 months of we've been in lockdown, 24 months. So we have literally moved 8 years ahead in technological advancement and forced adaptation mm-hmm. of technology. And we saw where major retail retail giants would not necessarily thought about e-commerce had to rush and adjust. We saw supply chain. We saw the move to literally millions of people who moved from going to the offices to actually working from home when we said it's going to start beginning in 2025. We saw the shift in education where solutions had to come for the challenges of having children work and being in the home at the same time. There was a demand for bandwidth that went around the world. All of these things that were supposed to happen beginning in 2025 for the new evolution of the second digital revolution, we saw it begin to happen accelerated. So now we're about 8 years, not in adoption, but 8 years in demand for the technology that we anticipated would be needed in 8 years is now being demanded today. So you have supply chain issues where chips and things are not being supplied. So essentially, the Bahamas must also adopt and adapt, or we could find ourselves in economic debt. And so we have to begin to look at all of our industries and begin to think, how can we innovate? When we begin to look at banking and financial services, take a look at what is happening with the banks. You know, we are arguing that banks are leaving the old islands. That's not a problem. We are arguing that banks are not wanting us to not come inside and make deposits. That's not a problem. A lot of places in the world have been doing this 25 years now in the developed countries, and they are our major competitors. And so we must adopt and adapt. And the beauty about us adopting and adapting is we are a speedboat. Most of the larger economies that we compete with are like cruise ships. So we can turn in the harbor almost instantaneously, whereas they have to make complete circles because of the size of their economy, et cetera.
Hold on, Cialin. And like I said, you know, there's going to be a conversation. Is it accurate that we are actually a speedboat, or we have the potential to be a speedboat?
We are a speedboat without the engine on.
Okay, so the truth is we have all the necessary characteristics, but we are not behaving to our optimal advantage then.
Absolutely. Because, for instance, one of the things that we can talk about is the sand dollar impact. Mm-hmm. Where we are, here's what I'm saying to you. We have this engine called the sand dollar, the first in the world to have a central bank depository note. Mm-hmm. First in the world, a major accomplishment. I mean, China, the United States, major economies are still struggling on deciding to follow us, but we have not aggressively and rapidly adopt this across the Bahamas, where we are saying, oh, banks, somebody needs to make a deposit into a bank or withdraw to the bank on the old islands, when we should have an education process to simply say the sand dollar wallet is the same as a bank. So for those who just say, oh, I have $200 in the bank and the bank is taking $10 out, why don't just deposit your money into your sand dollar digital wallet and no money is taken out except for when you go to use it and you take it out.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah, I'm saying if we expand this all on the old islands, we can actually begin to facilitate this because, again, most every businesses that accept sand dollar will also be a place that you could withdraw and deposit cash. But one of the things is that we have a bank almost on every island in the Bahamas. And we keep saying that this bank is leaving, that bank is leaving. What people don't realize is that the post office is one of the first banks in the Bahamas. The post office is a bank. by international standards, as well as in the Bahamas, the post office is defined as a bank. And so we just haven't looked at it for what the potential can be.
If we go back to the point you made at the beginning, and I don't want to use words I can't pronounce, but we have essentially, in many instances, we kind of shackling ourselves to what is or what was without thinking through. So yes, the economy is in a perilous state, but I would think that in this perilous state, there are a huge number of opportunities. You mentioned an eight-year leapfrogging in terms of the movement in technology. This is where we're supposed to be hanging our hats on at this point in time. So rather than trying to get things back to normal as they were, we should be seeking to see how can we radically change, how can we respond to the revolution which has taken place, and to leverage that, one, to reduce costs, and two, to get to places which, you know, we were challenged with anyway. So why not just move in that direction and do it in a fashion which is going to benefit us, but do so as speedily as we can, so that we can leverage the advantage that we have today.
I couldn't have said it better. Exactly what it is. And so for me, when I look at the archipelago of the Bahamas, I always see New Providence as the challenge. And believe it or not, so New Providence took the focal point of our development for a number of years, number of decades. But now that we must move into the new digital accelerated interconnected realm, the disadvantage of the old islands becomes an advantage for our adoption and adaptation for them, because you have a smaller subset of people to change, mm-hmm. and a smaller infrastructural build out that has to occur. So those could happen in the matter of a week or 2 weeks, let's say 30 days at max for all the old islands, mm-hmm. except for Abaco and Grand Bahama. Even for Andres, in spite of its size, is still less than 30 days. But even for Abaco and Grand Bahama, add another month, 2 months at max due to the population size. But basically, the demographic spread out for it, it becomes very easy for us to adopt and adapt infrastructurally for the 21st century. It's when you reach the critical mass of New Providence, and I don't want to use the word lack of planning, but lack of implementation of the infrastructure, because basically, there was no demand from the people for it. And this is why you see BTC is rushing with its fiber to the home. Cable Bahamas, a lot of people may not realize, is that from early 2000s, Cable Bahamas had fiber to the home, fiber to the premises for most homes and most businesses, probably 90% or more of the entire Bahamas. And so so what happens for them now is simply putting in better switches to accommodate the new demand for higher bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm one to believe that we may have to consider 5G, and especially on the older islands first, and then come to New Providence. But I want people to understand 5G is not about cellular. That's like saying the food store is about a loaf of bread. You just happen to be able to get bread at the food store, but it is not what it's all about. So 5G is about industry. It is about performance. It's about data. It's about everything else. And we must move away from the consumer mindset that, oh, we could consume cellular or videos or whatever else faster, mm-hmm. And quicker and more environment. It's for interconnectivity, the Internet of Things, knowing when your garbage is full, knowing when your automated car, I mean, it's for everything.
Yeah, so we need to start, get to the point where we are not looking at these improvements from through a consumer lens. We're supposed to be looking at them through a productive lens. We need to be looking at them through where the world is going. So, as you mentioned, smart houses. The question is, you know, my house was built way back in the day and it's dumb as hell, right? So who is going to retrofit that? Because it needs to be retrofitted, yeah? You know, so there are opportunities. You spoke about the Internet of Things. But we also have right here in the Bahamas, and I'm going to be very careful with this. I want to be sensitive and not, come across I'm not going to say anything bad. I just don't want to be misinterpreted. We have recently had the pleasure, maybe the privilege, of having one of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange land in the country.
Yes.
That exchange as an entity has proven itself to be, in recent times, very philanthropic, yeah? And that's positive. However, and Carl, I see you. I come to you before I allow C. Allen to speak, because, you know, he talks long. Okay, let's stay at this, Carl, and come back to this point, because I think you're going to break up what we are about to say, C. Allen. Carl, you're on the Essentials. Go ahead.
Hi, Brother Edwards is Dale Abinose on C. Allen.
How are you doing, Dale?
Hi, Dale.
I just want to say that your conversation is very timely and something that, you know, we've been asking for and struggling with getting that narrative on in the national narrative to discuss these things, because C. Allen is spot on, except for I would say his speedboat is a scarab, a race boat. And, you know, race boats require special engines and special drivers. And those are the two things I think we have missing in the whole mix of moving to a digital environment from a point of view. But the big thing is that not necessarily the infrastructure, which is easy, but it's the applications that we need to focus on in order to make sure that we have those that will give us the greatest impact first, versus anything else, because we seem to tend to like to do things that is cosmetically good for the public eye, but not necessarily that is good for us as a nation to raise the whole ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm not sure if y'all would be talking about that a little bit more.
Yeah, we will get there. The thing that we don't want to do is to overload this as a totally digital discussion, because, like I just mentioned to you, my house was built a long time. Far as technology is concerned, in terms of being a smart house and, you know, the application of the Internet of Things, it's not there, right? It's certainly not there. But hold on, Appy. But it's a perfect analogy, I think, for where we are as a country. There are many, many aspects of us which is really significantly stuck, not just from a technological perspective, in an old way of thinking that we need to totally revolutionize, and we need to spring forward 4, 5, 8 years. And we need to understand that the only way we are going to get there is to implement, first of all, to discuss and agree and implement the necessary reforms.
Yes, fair enough. But what I'm saying, though, is this, that it has to be an intentional action. It's not going to just be normal, right? And, you know, and something to think about, we talk about the new built environment.
Mm-hmm.
These are intentional things that need to happen.
Okay, I agree with you.
Hold on before you go. Just look at this. For 20 years, and see, Alan can give you more concrete dates and stuff like that. We've had the ability to do working from home and the like. This is something that I know at BTC, we back then we would even strive to do, but we couldn't, like you say, get the mentality to have it done,
mm-hmm.
right? COVID come along and slap us twice,
mm-hmm.
lick us down, and we stand back up, and everybody doing working from home and working remotely.
Right.
The same thing needs to happen with everything else that you can talk about, because it's not a cherry on a long period of time. The infrastructure, the foundation is there. It's just a matter of now taking it and running with it. And so you need to have a good engine and you need to have good drivers.
Okay, thank you so much.
And once you have those two things, it will take everybody else fast.
Appreciate it.
Because they want to be there.
Appreciate it, Appy. Yeah, so... and he makes a very good point. Obviously, in everything, leadership is very important. So the drivers need to be there. And of course, you need to have the engine to push it. So you need consensus, you need strategy, you need everyone to be pushing in a particular direction. And in that way, the speedboat analogy, it becomes a real speedboat and it turns quickly, have the nimbleness because it's a small economy and we can move forward. But I want to go back to the what I was about to ask you, Cialin. We now have FTX, one of the second largest, I think it's the second largest exchange in the world. And we have the opportunity, we have seen where their philanthropic fervor is at a very high level. We have had discussions very, very often about Freeport, for example, Grand Bahama becoming a technology hub. Are we in this moment flirting with the possibility of missing the opportunity of doing what it is that we should be doing, leveraging the presence of FTX in the country?
You're right on point. Since FTX arrival in the Bahamas, I can say that FTX is, if it's not the largest, it is surely one of the busiest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world. If you look at what they also did, since then, and I understand free things. We, as a country, we like free things. But I think at the same time, we should be looking at Bankman's launch of the $2 billion crypto fund. Mm-hmm. And it's very important because what happens is he is looking to tap into burgeoning startups in the, they call it the nascent, NASCENT crypto space. And and the word nascent mean things are just coming into existence, just beginning to show signs.
Emerging, of not sure where they are. They fledgling for the regular people like me.
Right, and so what it does now, it gives behemoths the ability to just simply come up with ideas on how they think various aspects of digitization around the world should occur, or how they could bring a better focus to fintech, healthcare, education. And we, you know, we have in this education issue right now, social gaming, whatever it is right now, you basically have a firm and an infrastructural readiness, even though we are not have tapped into it yet. But infrastructurally, more like you say, for Grand Bahama, we are ready to basically tap into this and try to make this crypto fund, make Grand Bahama its home, where people come for an innovation startup, where people come for whatever type of startup there is, you know, a startup ecosystem. And so we have the ability, because it shows that Bankman-Fried, I think is his name, has basically giving us a global platform of advertising that we cannot duplicate. So it's now for us to be able to have conversation in context. No, and not simply saying we want you to do it. We basically saying here's what we, you know, we basically need to have a pitch right now to say to him, this is what we believe Grand Bahama can do, and we are willing to work with you to create a paradigm that Grand Bahama and the Bahamas as a whole will be a digital paradise where people can come live, work, play, shop, you know, dine, do whatever, and at the same time, change the world from a digital perspective. And I think the window is closing and we need to move quickly in developing this new Silicon Valley environment that has been presented to us.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And here's what my pitch would be, Cialin. Yes, we like the philanthropic effort. We like you contributing to various charity because people need money and people need the help. But what about thinking how we can leverage the blockchain technology? What about thinking that we have a problem with the Family Islands and the lack of economies and the inability to profitably provide banking, intermediation, big word for banking. So why don't we go back to the initial strategy, the initial thinking of having Grand Bahama serve as a digital hub and expand that to become now a crypto hub, because we're not looking at coins, right? We're looking at the technology behind these cryptocurrency, the blockchain or whatever.
That they're built on.
Yes. And right. Why don't you help us to build out sandboxes and accelerators such that the existing fintechs, and they're not quite fintechs, they're more money services business, but the existing money services business that we have on Highland suddenly mushroom into becoming real fintechs, and we solve the problem of economic movement of funds across the archipelago. But more importantly, we start to create an ecosystem within Grand Bahama or wherever the location is, such that we can nurture development, nurture starts up, export them to the rest of the country, and then export them internationally.
You're absolutely correct. And let's use an example, even within the blockchain environment. If you stick with, because I want people to understand, again, blockchain is like this major supermarket, and cryptocurrency is only one item in the supermarket.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that, and even as we stick just to what FTX does, there's an absolute need for custodian of hard keys for accounts, for storage of money, just like banking, mm-hmm. and all of these different things that comes out of cryptocurrency that literally can insert a multi-billion dollar economic fintech model on Grand Bahama in a matter of less than a year, and adopting rules and laws. I've used this example saying the Bahamas, as far as I'm aware, is the only place in the world that can offer constitutional privacy and constitutional data protection. And why is there a difference between regular? Because the constitutional bar is higher to achieve than just a legal bar. If, say, something happens from a legal standpoint, you know, they could go into parliament, change the law, mm-hmm. the next day, all the information is gone. It's changed and now people are running. Right. But to change it from a constitutional standpoint, if you interpret our constitution digitally, mm-hmm. you will now have a protection that people around the world will want, both the data protection as well as the constitutional privacy. And that makes us even a more viable aspect mm-hmm. in the whole aspect of blockchain.
Okay.
And so what I'm simply saying is that we have a huge opportunity from so many different ways. And FTX, and I'm sure there's others that may be looking at us.
Yeah,
and so if you get FTX to plant the seed, trust me, competition enters the marketplace as who can dominate that new space.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're going to take ourselves a break. But here is the thing. I am not saying that everything I just dream up is totally right and totally workable. But what is important about that, I think, is the dream part.
The conversation.
The dream part, the conversation. We have to become more aspirational. Because as we are having this conversation, there are other persons and other locations looking on and say, how can we duplicate this? But not only duplicate it, do it better. And we have some huge advantages. The first central bank digital currency in the world. The first, as much as I am aware, the first country in the region, in this side of the region, to have a cryptocurrency exchange anywhere on the planet. You know, I mean, in a small island setting like this, an offshore jurisdiction.
Small island state.
Yes, small island state. There's no one. There's no other one. There's some things taking place in some other jurisdiction, but they're not quite the same. How can we dream up a new reality using these things which has landed? Well, you know, some of them we created, but has landed in our laps. Let us take a very quick break. And when we come back, caller, we see you, but we'll get you on the other side of the break. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we want to talk some more with Cialin. I know when we have this conversation, it gets digital very quickly. But we want to stick to some other fundamentals because it's bigger than that. It's social, it's economic, and it's many other things. Don't move. Come right back.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises the public, its customers, and residents of Taylor Street, Nassau Village, that the corporation will commence improvement work on January 31st, 2022, for a period of 10 weeks. During this period, there may be interruption in water supply, road closures, and detours around the work area. Where possible, motorists are asked to avoid the area between the hours of 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused and appreciates your patience as they work to improve their level of service.
Mommy, guess what I did in school today?
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died as a result of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting while driving. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Texan.
Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
And welcome back to The Essentials. We're having a conversation here with CLN, very lively conversation, exploring some of the digital aspects, but also looking at some of the broader things that we need to do as we build the economy. We have a caller which is holding on for a while, so let's go to the call very quickly. Welcome to The Essentials.
I thank you so very much for what you're doing as you're contributing to the development of this country, sir, by hosting such a great opportunity for us Bahamians. I want to ask a question to your guest, who I know a bit. How does a Bahamian, or how would a Bahamian go about, not without having a social security number, being able to get a non-fungible token, an NFT, up and running, and link it to your Gemini wallet, and actually convert that to fiat? If you could explain that for the general public a bit, I would like to hang up and listen. May I please?
Yeah, go ahead, see Alan.
It's a very simple process, but not simple in the steps. But because you can get a tax identification number and other things from the U.S. at no charge, even though people charge up to $500,000. But there's some steps you have to. But you can, the only prohibition or negative of that is just basically having your money converted into non-behemoth currency for the purchase of those things based on where you're buying it. So I just tell him the best thing to do is to hit me up, or if anybody want additional information so we don't take away from this and going in that direction, at 825-9700, 825-9700, and I can provide them some additional information or on any of the social media, C. Allen Johnson, any social media.
Okay, so find C. Allen and you will get that. All right, C. Allen, I know when the risk is talking to an individual like you who's so technologically minded and digital minded, is like, you're going to drag me in the deep blue sea of, all of these things. But we want to, because I know persons are out there listening, but we want to take the edge off this. And the reason I want to take the technological edge off this is simply, there are so many other aspects, right, to the economy as we speak, which are in fact very challenged, needs to be fixed. And it needs to move alongside the digital revolution. The whole digitization and digital transformation is going to enable these things. So in the era of education, in the era of social support, in the era of the reforms which are necessary to move governance to the level where you have greater accountability and transparency. Talk to us about those aspects and how important they are for the actual growth and development of the country going forward.
This is where we need education, because I guess you can say that almost because of our size and this whole integration into each other, there's a young lady by the name of Eden Mary Gator who took these various different economic models in the Bahamas, combined the blue, the orange, the green, the knowledge, and all these different variations of the economy, and she gave it the name aquamarine economy, where you have the symbiotic type environment of it, which is ideally describes the behemoth economy. When you talk about the blue economy, you must realize that it's integrated directly into our hospitality industry, our tourism industry. But at the same time, it also is part of our food security type environment. And so then you go to the green economy and you see that the green economy is directly related and integrated into the blue economy, which is integrated into our blue economy. And then you come to the orange economy for the creative aspect of it. And if you look at the breakdown of the orange economy, it's more than entertainment. It is about the creative mindset. How do you see things in a different way? How would you exploit the even blue economy from that type of environment? And so all of this is that when you go to the knowledge economy, it's a collection of information concerning the various things of our country and exploitation and imagining new ways of doing it from a conceptual mind point, which brings us to conceptual economy. And so we do have a symbiosis economic model, because our banking, the very survival of a new banking model requires new income. And so when we look at all of these various different economy models, because we haven't moved to the point of production yet, even though if we look at these economic models, these are all export items. Tourism and hospitality is an export item. But when we start producing in the blue economy, the orange economy, the green economy, these become export items. So now we talk about moving possibly millions, if not billions of dollars in and out of the economy based on our consumption as well as our production. We now need banking models where we own our own banking and financial service systems. Because as behemoths begins to multiply in their wealth, they will want to have influences in other countries, in other locations. And so we have to look at where we are and where we want to be. And education plays a huge role in it, especially now that we having the, would be considered a negative, but no, we're not having it, the potential negative effect of the thousands that are out of school. And we could address that by basically pausing, and we use the word hybrid very often, face-to-face, digital. And if we actually look at the blockchain, if we actually look at these various different economic models, we need, and we've been producing workers. When I said workers, I mean send them to school, go to work, and you can find a job in the hospitality industry. So while education is paused, not everyone will be the intellectuals or whatever it is that we want. And so we have an opportunity while we are saying we have a gap in learning for us to assess where all of our students are today, decide the economic, the viability of various economic models that will cause the Bahamas to grow, and begin to look on how we could utilize technology again, sorry for that, to access where we are and train them. See, the beauty about technology is, and artificial intelligence, is that once you say, as an example, you have a person who was in the fourth grade when COVID started, let's say for socialization purposes in the sixth grade, but they may not have been progress at all from the fourth grade. We can move them to the sixth grade for socialization process, develop a four-year regime, so by the time they reach the eighth grade, they would have moved from the fourth grade to be accelerated to the eighth grade by using technology to individually teach that student, with the teacher being a aid to the technology learning process, mm-hmm. as well as part of the socialization. So you may have 20 students in the same class, each at a different level. So instead of a teacher standing in the class trying to teach each of them for 2 or 3 minutes in that 1 hour, technology embraces them and knows exactly who they are, exactly knows their weaknesses, and moves to strengthen it and slowly moves them forward to where they need to be. And the teacher and the teacher's aide is now there
as facilitators,
as an assistant. And so, but at the same time, we begin to direct them into this multiplicity of economic opportunities that they become aware of, because there will be some skill sets that don't necessarily need the full head-on reading, writing, arithmetic type thing, but I like to think of STEAM. And the new concept is science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. Mm-hmm. And so we could look at where their skill set is and prepare them for, we're going to need people, as we maybe just talked about this IoT, the buildings are going to be changing. Construction is going to be changing.
Yep.
Maintaining those is going to be changing. Driving is going to be changing. Roads is going to change. I mean, AC, everything is going to change. And so this is not a where we say, oh, we're going to have a catastrophe in a decade from now because these students are not learning. Well, we will if we do nothing. But we have the opportunity to talk about education from a future standpoint and actually begin to look on how we could embrace technology to enhance their learning while using face-to-face to enhance the socialization environmental type of it. So it isn't just simply saying putting them back in the classroom.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we could prepare our teachers to teach globally. Because say, for instance, you have a math teacher, a combination of math teachers who teach in all fourth grade. By the time I get each of them to teach for a couple of months, I don't want to use this as a negative. I don't need them anymore for the syllabus part, because I've taken artificial intelligence, combined all of them together into one syllabus based on what I was trying to achieve. And so they can only continuously add new information, but the old information they have to repeat is no longer needed. Mm-hmm. So guess what they can do? The entire Caribbean now needs to catch up to the world and to the Bahamas. So those teachers now are now part of the knowledge economy. They can now teach anywhere, and the intellectual capital that they have developed in these processes allows them to go around the world without leaving the Bahamas.
I think that's an exciting thought. The thing that ran through my mind as you spoke, C. Allen, was, you know, there was a point in time when we were largely illiterate. And by we, I mean us people living on this side of the world, right? Yes. And it retarded the extent to which we could develop economically, because persons were illiterate and you had an elite few who could read, and we were in colonialism and so on and so forth. But there's actually a risk, and I think a significant risk, and maybe an even more debilitating risk, of us, and I'm generalizing here, of us again becoming illiterates within a new world.
Digitally illiterate.
Yes.
We'll be functionally illiterate, functional digital literate, to be that we will function, that we will be learning to use a wallet, but we will not be active participant in the economic models of it.
Right, and that therefore has huge implications for our economic development going forward in a new world, in a new paradigm.
Absolutely. This is where you'll begin to see a form of poverty not seen anywhere, because digital poverty will augment physical poverty, because without the ability to integrate, you will then be looking for means to come out of poverty that is slowly disappearing. And so where you have skill set, where we talk about these various different economic models, and we have a rising poverty, the chairman and minister of foreign affairs said that 47% of the human population is now living below the poverty line. And so what do we do with it? We can give them food, we can give them water, we can give them clothing. But is it going to be temporary, or are we going to have this as a transitional effect? And so when we begin to look at these various different models, we can look to say, how do we empower a person? Do we give them $180 a month for a family of four? Or do we find these niches in these various models to find out how we could transition them into it? So even if they only make $1,500 a month, it is much better than the $200 a month they're looking the government for. And so, but the problem, the good thing about that is they will become strengthened in their ability to recognize that this little skill they have obtained has allowed them to become global competitors. Remember, it's 8 billion of us. We are blessed that we are in a region geographically that allows us to be above maybe 50% or more of the world. And so we can then utilize that to our advantage, where you have FTX, our geolocation, and other things that is available to us, as well as our digital infrastructure, to basically nudge our population towards these seven different economic models that we talk about. And even there's a silver model for senior citizens, and I don't want them to believe that you age out of this. To escape this new reality, you have to die. Mm-hmm. You're going to be born in it, and you'll have to die to leave it. And so even those individuals that have the intellectual capacity, where we say we retire you at 60 or 65, will now become players in this new global marketplace, in this new beam and economic model that we can develop.
Talk to us about how this impacts and changes governance, and how governance itself has to be responsive to this new environment.
Absolutely. Org talks about these new environment of freedom of information, transparency, accountability, and integrity, all of these things. These are all non-negotiable items as part of the blockchain. Mm-hmm. There's no choice in what it is. It's a public ledger of things. It's a public ledger of information, unchangeable. Even if you put, say, how we like to say, cabinet is private, once you put it on the blockchain, it'll be in cabinet. You can exercise that blockchain, that grouping of blockchain for privacy, but you will not be able to modify it. And so in 40 years, when that becomes available to in the greater public domain, it'll be exactly as it happened in real time. Those individuals will be able to go and as if they're watching a movie and see exactly what happened once that information goes into disclosure. And so as we talk about this digitization and digitalization of it, and digitization is converting to digital, and digitalization is the actual use of digital. And so if we consider the fact that if we do believe in this freedom of information, we do believe in this integrity and access, we can begin almost immediately, and again, go back to FTX and others, that totally understand the blockchain or can refer us to people who understands it. And so we can go to the freedom of information almost instantaneously going forward, and then retroactively go and put things on the blockchain, which will be in the shortest periods of time, because even for the documents that have not been destroyed in Dory and whatever, we need to digitize it, because you can't have real freedom of information in a non-digital environment, because you cannot go through decades of boxes and boxes of papers or whatever else.
Exactly.
The beauty about it is we don't have to sort it. We can scan it as is, where is, and technology will sort it and catalog and categorize it for us. So it isn't like you say, oh, you have to sort social services, whatever. You just scan, verify, and destroy. Scan, verify, and destroy. And artificial intelligence, OCR, and other things will catalog it. Because simply now, you know how you go to Google? You could just go and ask a question, and even artificial intelligence could make a determination as to whether that should be released, and ask and prompt a human to verify before the release happens, the data commission or whatever grouping you want to call it. And so, again, we are small enough to flip this. But imagine where we become the sovereign data capital of the world. You know, we talk about Estonia with their digital passport. Imagine 2, 3, 4 billion people who want data sovereignty, who want data privacy, who wants to be involved in the blockchain, who wants to believe in integrity, innovation, all these things, fighting to become digital citizens of the Bahamas, even for a small fee. We could change. We will literally become the data capital of the world, because blockchain is also about data.
Yes.
We will become no other country in the world will be able to match us, because even if you choose data, the data sovereignty, guess what? We could tell people around the world, anything you hold on our citizens, whether digital citizenship or regular citizenship, it must be in the Bahamas. Guess what? We couldn't have enough space to build the data centers.
Definitely. And conversations like this could go on and on for a long time. But we're certainly running out of time. So we're going to ask you to, wrap up. Give us your closing ideas on this. You've shared a lot. We've talked about, looking at Grand Bahama, making that become a digital crypto blockchain hub. More the blockchain than the crypto, because it's the utility of the technology. We talk about the impact on education, the impact on the social arena, and also the impact on governance. And I think we need to start thinking about ourselves in terms of the new world, how it will be. So your final words, Cialan.
Yeah, my final words is to separate what you did, the word crypto, from cryptocurrency.
Right.
Those are two different things. And so we can become the crypto bedrock of the world. And it's not just, and I'm saying to you, Grand Bahama will be the jump off, but Grand Bahama can handle the new model of hospitality, the new models of tourism, the new model of the various different economies, as well as the new aspect of data management. And Grand Bahama, Freeport, we talk about Singapore, and just quickly, Freeport is 30 square miles smaller than Singapore. Freeport fits in the Grand Bahama 4 times. So that tells you Singapore got 6 million people. That tells you the capacity of Grand Bahama to hold people. And so we must look at the fact that Grand Bahama is the Silicon Valley, for lack of a better word, waiting to be birthed, that will create the new global influencers and millionaires. It's right here at our doorsteps, and we only need to open our minds to allowing this opportunity to flourish. And I say to you, the collective intelligence of all of us is greater than the subset of the smaller of us.
Thank you so much, Cialan. It was certainly a pleasure. I think you shared a lot. I think you shared just enough to get us thinking. And here is the position that we want to leave with. We are in the new normal. The new normal has been here for a long time. I did a presentation recently, and I said all the things that we know, all the things that we will need going forward, it's going to become a reality that what we knew to be normal is gone. So we knew normal, just playing on the word. We knew what was normal. Going forward, it's not going to be like that. Going forward, it's going to be disruptive. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be different. And just like we see with the application of the DARE Act from the Securities Commission of the Bahamas, we see FTX here. We are talking about cryptocurrency and the use of blockchain. We have individuals who are championing the digital environment. We have the first central bank digital currency in the world. Just like how these things are emerging, we now need to pull them together. And we need to pull them together in such a way that we're fixing the country, not just those things which are uber technology centric, but all of the other things which can be enabled by the technology. We're in a brand new world, an exciting world, and we have to find a way to move forward, because the country needs it. And the country is at a place where moving in that direction is going to be oh so positive. We always end by saying, never allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. All that is left to say is walk good, be safe, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night. You know it's
So essential, so serious.